Not your typical Thursday afternoon. We got some rain, which is great. We haven't had a lot of it lately, but also we've got NBA basketball going on right now. And with Kyle Draper on assignment today, we've got the great Jerry Reynolds in with us. So, Jer, how are we doing here? Indiana leading Milwaukee so far, huh?
Yeah, looks like it. 48-42. I guess we won't really know much about who's going to win until near the end of the game, probably.
Sure, sure. What's the number you'd put on? What, remember you used to do this on TV? What's the number that it's going to take to win? It's a little early to do that.
Yeah. Grant always liked to put me on a spot there with about three to go or five.
You're pretty good at that, though, weren't you?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, just common sense tells you a lot of it. At what rate they've scored for 30 or 40 minutes is probably going to be somewhat similar for the next eight.
We know that the NBA would love to have the Bucks against the Lakers. Do you have any small market preferences here? Would you like to see those plans spoiled?
Oh, absolutely. I would love to see those plans spoiled. I think we all know that the league would prefer to see Milwaukee and the Lakers play for the championship. I don't think there's any doubt. And, of course, the interest would be greater with Antetokounmpo and LeBron playing.
We try to put our bias, our anti-Laker bias aside, and we try to get over, 2002.
I don't try. Yeah.
All that said, what did you make of the two-minute report that came out yesterday and said that Reeves had control of the ball, and so that granting LeBron the timeout at the end of the Phoenix game was the correct call?
Well, I said, really? I got eyeballs, and I don't believe that's right.
Yes.
I mean, that's always the thing that's bothered me the most about the replays is they're not getting that right all the time. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's – so for at least if you're not going to get it right all the time, then do it quicker.
Yeah.
Screw up quicker.
You're going to get it wrong anyway. At least save us some time.
30 seconds. So, when you go to the replay, you got 30 seconds. Make a decision. Stay with the call or don't. But don't drag it out and still you might mess it.
If there's any reason behind the final two-minute report being public, it's that, we admit our mistakes, right? Whatever benefit is that. But if you're going to come up with a two-minute report that tells everyone something that everyone knows is wrong, that two-minute report needs to go away.
Oh,
right.
What a waste of time. It's, just all it does is double the frustration.
No one feels better about it or good about it.
No.
Yeah, especially when it's blatantly wrong on top of everything else.
Yes, yes. And, I thought there were less, really, back in the day where there's two referees, there were less issues at that time than there is with three and replay and all that. I mean, you went into game knowing, hey, they're going to miss some calls. They basically admit it usually and say, we'll get you next one.
Yeah.
We'll make it, and at the end of the day, there'd probably be 15 missed calls a game, which there still are, and it'd kind of be 8 one way, 7 the other, but it'd be very close. Not like the Lakers and Kings back in, 2002?
Are there maybe so many cameras now that we see too much and it makes it seem worse than it is? As you say, there was a time when we were more accepting of missed calls. Now with replay, we expect them to get everything right, and they're never going to get everything right.
Yeah, it really exaggerates it a little bit. I mean, I think you see it more in the NFL than even the NBA, where they break it down, was his cleat on the white line or something, that sort of thing.
Super slow-mo. Yes, his hip is touching just as the ball is starting to come out of his arm.
Yeah, or some little basically passing interference where the guy touched his jersey as he went by. And then, of course, like against my beloved Chiefs, they let a guy jump on his back 2 seconds before the ball got there. And so it's like, really? Really?
They've done that more and more this year in the NFL at the end of games where they just, it's the end of the game. We're going to let that go. It seems like it's something they've talked about and don't want to admit publicly. But they don't call pass interference at the end of a game.
At the end of a game, and certainly on the Hail Marys. I mean, and it's always been that way. I mean, I'm not at all sure that's not a good strategy. Just all four downs, just throw it down there.
Yeah, wait for chaos to ensue. There's been a lot of back and forth on this station King's Platforms. I know you do work for the King's Herald. A lot of people right now, as we discussed earlier, are frustrated with Harrison Barnes because they look at the fact that the Kings aren't playing well. They look at HB and say, well, he's not producing, so he must be the problem. He's not the problem, is he? He's the HB. The Kings would not be better off if they just got rid of him. Are we maybe not appreciating some of the things that he does for this team?
Oh, I think that's true. I mean, he is a solid defender. I mean, on a team that is not good defensively, and I wouldn't say he's a top-level defender, but he is versatile. You can put him on small forwards or power forwards. Has he underperformed? I think he has, but not to the level that, you know, you kind of hear, like, because, I mean, there's some stats I believe in, and, you know, scoring efficiency is one of them, and next to Domas, he's the second highest on the team. The problem is he just isn't shooting enough, trying to score enough. And I certainly, a lot of the blame does belong on him there. He should be more aggressive, but some of it's on the team. There's not a selfish bone in his body, as Kings fans, I think, would all agree. So you really need to find ways to get him involved early and a little more often, because he's not going to go searching for shots, like maybe a Monk or Fox would, and as they should.
But maybe he should a little bit?
I think he should, sure, yeah. Sure.
Yeah, given that they're such a bad defensive team and that he's one of their better defenders, I shake my head when I hear people say, oh, they need to get rid of him. I mean, just that, for that reason alone, I think he's much more valuable than most fans do. You don't have a team that plays a lot of good defense. He's one of your better defenders, so he's really important.
Well, and two, when it gets into trading guys, who are you getting better? You have to get somebody better, or it doesn't make you better. Now, there's guys, yeah, if you could trade him for Durant, I'm on board.
Sure.
That probably isn't going to fly, you know. And so, the Monty McNair, and they know what it would take to improve the team, and certainly all but a couple of guys are probably available. But, we've talked about this before. I mean, you can't make somebody's other team trade. You know, there has to be an agreement on both sides to do anything, and I think that's been the issue. Yeah, I think he's a player that has been a big part of winning the last couple of years, or the last year, and then this year. So, I'd give him a pass for a little bit, but I do kind of tend to blame a little bit the team. And as I've said before, he's a good low post player, and he's shown that. And we don't see him in the low
post.
That's
interesting.
So to me, it's like, put him in there, get him in there, because Domas is comfortable out high passing and things and finding people. So call plays, get him down there.
A lot of fans feel this way. We had a gentleman who called a couple days ago, and I thought he really said what a lot of fans are feeling. That is, okay, Harrison Barnes last year, he was free agent. The Kings had a chance to improve there, and instead they brought him back when they could have improved. That's how fans feel. Is there anything, any sense that, yes, the Kings missed an opportunity there by bringing back Harrison Barnes?
Well, at his contract, you'd have to say, now, who can you get better at that exact contract? And who was available as a free agent that would have signed that's better?
A lot of fans will say, Jerry, and I'm not one of them, they should have gone after Kyle Kuzma.
Yeah, well, you could have, and that wouldn't have been enough money to get Kyle Kuzma.
Right, right.
I mean, not by a long
if
shot.
If he wanted to come here, which
yeah,
we
if
don't know.
He wanted to come. And I'm not a huge fan of Kyle Kuzma either, by the way. I mean, I think he's a good player.
Bless him, but want him on my team.
Yeah, yeah, he's a little bit like a Zach LaVine. I'm just not sure he's a guy that fits into a really non-selfish team concept.
Yes, I agree.
I guess that's the way I'd put it. And I think that's the real strength of this team, and is that it's totally unselfish. I don't know that I've seen a team any more unselfish than this team, and which is kind of the problem sometimes, I think, with Domas and Harrison Barnes both, where they don't look for themselves enough.
So the other side of that coin to me is Harrison Barnes has games like the last game where he only gets three shots. And, okay, maybe he should want the ball more, but it's not an issue for him. Whereas if you had one of those other two guys, I mean, it's hard to imagine Kyle Kuzma or Zach LaVine only getting up three shots. But if they did, it would be a huge issue, right? For Harrison Barnes, it's like we're on to the next game.
Well, I guarantee you that if, in fact, either one of those guys were here and maybe had five shots, you'd look over on the bench while they were being taken out, and their heads would be down towel on it.
Yes, yes.
And pretty soon there'd be leaks to the media.
Yeah, we don't need any of that. Don't need any of that drama. When we come right back after a quick break here, we'll take a look at the split personalities of this year's Kings. Jerry's in for Kyle Draper. Today it's the Drive Guys on Sacktown Sports. 38.6 seconds left in the second quarter of the first in-season tournament semifinal. And, hey, the Pacers are leading the Bucks 60-49. Dame Lillard's not having a very good game. Tyrese Halliburton is pleading his case to an official after a call that he didn't agree with. Jerry Reynolds is in for Kyle Draper today. So, Jerry, as we're watching Tyrese Halliburton here, and he's been a big story this year, why do you think it didn't work for the Kings? Why did they have to move him? Forget about which one they moved. They didn't have an option. But why didn't it work here for the Kings with Fox and Tyrese Halliburton?
Well, I think it gets down to sometimes as simple as there's one ball and there's one guy, two alphas, and there can only be one. And so the King, and then plus the Kings really needed a big player that they could count.
Yes.
They didn't have one, and there's no way they're going to draft one. And so there's, I always say, my analogy would be go back years ago when Monte Ellis is an all-star level player with the Warriors, and they drafted a guy named Curry, and they were together for a little while, and it really wasn't working that well.
No.
And so they traded Monte Ellis for Andrew Bogut, a very unpopular trade at the time.
Yes.
But Bogut was something they didn't have and they needed. And then more importantly, Curry got to become superstar Curry. And I think we've seen it a lot the same way with Fox. He became superstar Fox as opposed to he clearly wasn't before. And then, of course, Domas, his game has certainly translated to make the Kings a better team.
And Halliburton's made the best of it as well.
And he's elevated his game, and not a surprise, I think, to a major star status as well. So to my mind, it's worked very well for all concerned.
Except for going back to your analogy, it didn't work out that well for the Bucks because they actually could have had Steph Curry.
Yes, I mean they my understanding was they had actually offered either one to the Bucks and they chose Monte Ellis. So that's a little stinger right there.
Yeah, we talked about that yesterday. We don't want that guy with the bad ankles. You can't pull the wool over our eyes. We're going to take Monte Ellis. I remember that team when Steph was new and Clay was new and Monte had been there. And as good as those guys were, great shooters, when it came to the end of a game, they needed somebody to take the big shot. Monte Ellis was the guy.
He was always the guy.
He was fearless.
Yeah, I was going to say, as years go, you kind of forget that. But clearly, that team at that time, he was the guy they went to.
Why do you think it is the Kings this year seem to have at times a split personality? When they're winning, they're playing well. It's like, wow, this team could play with anybody. There was a quote here from Kendra Andrews. She said, and she was at the game Monday, when they win, they look like they could beat anyone. But when they lose, it's a completely different team. And the Kings are one of only three teams in the league that has a winning record but a negative point differential. Do you have any explanation for why this team at times looks so good and other times looks like, wow, those aren't the same guys?
Well, I'd be guessing. There's the things that come to mind. And to me, number one is three-point shooting. They look like world beaters when they're hitting a high percentage of their threes, and then they get beat when they don't. They depend on the threes so much.
And Monday was a great example of that, right? They came out, started the game so well, and then,
And I think opponents have gotten smarter about really taking away some of the real easy threes that they have gotten in the past. So that's different. I think that's a big part of it, just the three ball. You live by it, you die by it a little bit. That's the difference between, I thought those great Warrior teams, they shot a lot of threes, but people didn't realize they were great on back cuts, taking the easy twos, the high percentage with Clay Curry would take those 15-foot jump shots, escape dribble, get those mid-range things that they'd hit 80% of or 90.
Yeah. And then later on when they had Durant, too, and then he was the king of the mid-range.
So
it's like
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, the mid-range is like, yeah, well, a three-point shot's a three-point shot. But I mean, if you get 80% of your twos, mm-hmm. that's way better than 40% of your threes. So
when the Kings are missing threes like they were against the Pelicans, we get a lot of calls the next day from people, and it's a basic basketball thing, but people say, and they're not making threes, why do they keep shooting so many? So what's the answer to that? When the Kings aren't making threes, why do they keep shooting so many?
They probably shouldn't shoot so many, I would say. No, I mean, I think that is, number one, one of the reasons they do, that's their style of play. That's who they are, a three-point shooting team. But
their offense is set up to get an open three, right?
It's so open to, yeah, they're looking for the open threes. But there again, I think that's exactly it. If it's not open, you know, drive the ball to the basket. You know, they're very unselfish. You know, we see the ball moving around the perimeter so much, but all you're doing is just going from three-point shooter to three-point shooter to three-point shooter. Mm-hmm. It gets fairly easy to match up to, as opposed to going back to the Curry, Klay Thompson kind of thing, the escape dribble mm-hmm. type thing, where, you know, where Monk does that very well. You know, he certainly will take the three, but he is very, very aggressive of escape dribble to get into the basket or get into a mid-range shot.
They seem aware, too, as a team when they're not shooting well and guys start pressing. Mm-hmm. Doesn't it seem that way to you?
I think that's the way with any shooter, except for the great ones. The true great shooters, they never question their own ability. Uh-huh. They just assume, I'll make the next one. But I mean, most NBA players are humans. They miss a couple, and there's all of a sudden mm-hmm. that third one gets a little tougher to pull the trigger on.
Yeah, and we've seen that with the Kings where you got like two or three guys going through that at one time. I think another reason why the Kings look so Jekyll and Hyde at times this year is, to me, if you're not a good defensive team, which they're not, you're prone to that. And I think we've seen that through the years. I know you've seen it, you know, years and years and decades. When a team's not a good defensive team, it's just tough to be consistently imposing your will on the other club.
Yeah, I mean, that is it in a nutshell. I mean, if you're getting scored on consistently, you have to score consistently. And that gets pretty tough. And I always said back, you know, when the Kings were great in the Weber days and that sort of thing, they always got accused of being a poor defensive team, but they won by an average of about a 7-point margin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they were a good defensive team. I mean, to the fact they're scoring 7 more points than your opponents, that's
right,
the idea.
That's the idea, yeah, that's what it comes down to, yeah. Last year they had five? They were outscoring teams by about 5 a game?
Yeah, about 5 a game.
A defensive team?
So that's, you know, basically, I always say that's one of those stats. If you look at the end of the year, if you're winning by 3 or 4 points, you're probably going to win 45 games. If you're winning by 7 or 8 points, you're probably going to win 55 games.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And conversely, if you're under the winning margin, you're going to be under – don't be surprised if you're under 500.
You know, there's analytics formulas for that. Doesn't it seem like Mike Brown, though, feels like they can't get where they want to get to by being the team they were last year, and he doesn't want them to embrace that identity so much as he does want them to embrace the identity of being a much, much better defensive team.
Well, and he's right. I mean, obviously for them to that'd be the way to get better. The easiest way to get better is to get better defensively. That was probably the weakest part of their game. That's the good news. I think he's 100% right. The bad news is they're not very much better defensively.
And you got the same guys, right?
So that's always the tough thing. I always, you know, go back to the Rick Adelman kind of thought. You know, I've heard it from a lot of coaches, but Rick would always say, you know, you're not going to be great defensively if you don't have great defensive players.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, common sense sometimes is really not that common.
Right.
But that's really the truth. And, and the Kings don't have, obviously a couple guys are well above average, but that's, you don't have any elite defenders.
Mm-hmm. I think in a perfect world, they would be able to add, this is too much, Dad, you can't do this, but if you could add a 3-and-D wing, a rangy wing who can defend, and a bigger guard that could come in as kind of a stopper, I think those would be great fits on this team. I don't think it's realistic to think they could get those two things, maybe one thing, I don't know. But to me, I look at this roster, that's what I think this team needs.
Well, I do too. I mean, those would be things that would make the team better incrementally. I mean, it's not going to change it into a for sure world championship team. But it probably would immediately
takes the pressure off Sabonis on the back line.
Yeah. You know, just the overall, I think the thing with the Pelicans, I mean, what you saw was, besides depth, a lot of length. You know, they weren't, other than Valanciunas, that's not a big team, but it's a very long athletic team.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, other than probably Keegan, none of the front line guys are particularly long and athletic, and I think that's where Keegan, in my opinion, will eventually be really good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just given time and all that. I mean, as you should give him.
I'm not presuming the answer here, so it's a question. Harrison Barnes, he to me seems like kind of a tweener. Is he sometimes being asked to do things that maybe he's not best suited for as a forward?
Well, I think on this team to some degree because, you know, when he first came to the league, you know, that size would be a small forward. Now it's almost
right.
a power forward.
Right, right.
And so he's kind of.
Isn't that what happened when they got him? They got him to play three and Jaeger only played him at four? And people were like, why did we trade for him then?
Yeah, a little. And he can do it. That's the whole thing. I mean, it's one of those things that, yeah, he can do that. But it's kind of like Domas in Indiana could play four. And very effectively, but he's better at five.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, I always say Indiana, they had it just backwards. They should have played Domas offensively at five and Turner at four and then flopped it.
Yeah.
And I always remember saying, like, why can't you guys see that?
Uh-huh. I'm glad you brought that up because that's another thing people have been asking about this week. Why don't the Kings play Domas at the four? So we'll get to that when we come back. Also, how successful has this in-season tourney been? Let us count the ways when we return. Kyle Draper's on assignment today. It's the Drive Guys with Waddy and Jerry Reynolds and you on Sacktown Sports. Thanks for being with us today. Jerry Reynolds is with us today. Kyle Draper back tomorrow. And then tomorrow, Jerry, as you know, the Kings taking on the Phoenix Suns. But it looks like there will be no Kevin Durant tomorrow. So the Kings catching a break there.
That's a huge break, as it were. Yes. I mean, obviously, Kevin's one of the elite players in the world, no doubt about that. So, Booker's healthy, I guess, huh?
Yeah, and I know a lot of us were wondering about how they were going to handle the point guard situation, and he's been doing a pretty good job.
I still think it's almost unfair to him. I mean, he can do it, and he can do it at a high level, but I think, you know, as an off the ball, he's almost a Kobe,
mm-hmm.
a smaller Kobe, you know, if you can play him as a scorer and off the ball a little bit. But, you know, he's doing what the team needs him to do.
Yes, they're playing pretty well without Bradley Beal. That doesn't really surprise you, does it?
Not one bit. You know, I mean, Bradley hadn't played very many games in the last two. I was really surprised that they traded for him, to be honest, and I don't wish him ill. I mean,
of course.
But I think he's, you know, back problems are back problems, and he's had those for a couple of years, and he's got back problems again.
Yeah, to me, that struck me as a move that a newer owner wanted to make in the offseason, like, we're going to win the offseason, get people excited. I'm going to show people how you do this. Yeah, I don't care what it costs. Let's get Bradley Beal. Well, it was a mistake.
Yeah, it certainly appears that way. I mean, if you could have got, Bradley Beal of 4 years ago, wow, you got a big three.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not the Bradley Beal they've got because even in the last couple of years when he's played, he hasn't really
and
been
that amount of money too.
Yeah,
wow.
A huge $50 million a year or whatever for several more years. So, but I think you're right. I think probably a new owner,
mm-hmm.
you know, and as Washington said, oh, let's talk to this guy.
Yeah. Let's see, at the in-season tournament, 63-54 Indiana leading the Bucks early third quarter. So far, the in-season tournament, huge success. All right, it's a little nutty that they're playing here at 3:30 in the afternoon, but they got to clear the arena, clear the decks, get ready for the night game, which tickets are more expensive for the night game. That said, it's been a huge success. According to, I think I got this from Sports Illustrated, local viewership for group play games was up 20% from games played last November. National games on TV, the ratings were up 26% for the games that were part of the tournament. League Pass viewership for the seven group play nights increased by 25%. The league's average attendance, 18,206. Those numbers are a little hinky sometimes, but 18,206, highest for November, while the NBA's app and social channels had their best first month of the season. 3.9 billion video views. Their best first month of the season ever. So the league got it right, at least so far. Wanted to create some added interest early in the year, and it looks like it's worked. I give them credit.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't a big fan of it, but I became a fan. I've really enjoyed it. And I think the thing I've enjoyed is how competitive the games were, and the teams wanted to win.
Yes, yeah.
And that's what I wasn't sure of, you know, how the stars would they get involved, and we've seen that they have, and that's the whole key to the thing. If they ever lose a little bit of interest in the thing, then it won't work.
I was with you, and I thought, you know, guys like LeBron aren't going to care about the in-season tournament, and they jacked up the prize money and the players. Yeah, they're playing hard. I go back to the preseason game between the Warriors and the Kings this year. Remember that it was preseason. It didn't matter, but both teams wanted to win. Remember that, the one down there, or the last one down there? And that was the fact that players want to win makes a game watchable.
Yeah. All of a sudden, so, it's a fun game. You know, yeah. And so many regular season games sometimes, due to many different things, the schedule, injuries, just too many games, you just don't get the same kind of product.
Yeah, and that was another reason they did this, because they know the season's so long, and before, people didn't really consider the season to be starting until Christmas. You have the Christmas Day games. So they did a great job of recognizing, wow, we got this first month, we got to spruce it up a little bit, and so far they've pulled it off. They may have to make some tweaks, though. Not all the coaches were on board with the point differentials as a tiebreaker. Because you had Joe Mazzulla trying to explain to Billy Donovan why Boston was hacking Andre Drummond with a 32-point lead. So I don't know. That's something they may have to figure out.
Yeah, you would like to see, you know, really, you just think, good grief here.
Yeah.
Yeah, that you know, they surely come up with something better than that.
Yeah, you had Toronto leading the Bulls by 12 in the final seconds, and Siakam was launching a three. You know, so you can't do that. Well, point differential. We're trying to make sure we can win the tiebreaker. So, sure, some tweaking here and there. I would like to see him expand the group play, because I thought, you know, for it to mean more, they need to play more games in the group play stage. But anyway, nitpicking. So far, so good, especially for something that a lot of us thought, that ain't going to work.
Yeah, it you know, it's amazing to me. I mean, I think everything they did pretty much, I didn't like the courts, but I think it worked.
Yeah, a lot of people really didn't like the courts.
Yeah, I mean, to me, they overdid it. But I mean, I like the idea of the trophy on the middle of the.
They made their point, right? It's like, we got to make sure people know.
And I think that was obviously. I think it was a good move. I didn't particularly like it. I think they could make their point in the future, maybe less flashy. As the game we're watching, it's just. I think it's hideous.
Yeah, it's a blue court with, and then that stripe down the middle is through the foul lanes is red. So why that's the Las Vegas court, I don't know. But here we are. The Kings was a little more subtle, and I liked that, the colors that the Kings.
Yeah,
had.
I thought the Kings had the best court. I really did. I mean, that may be just my bias, but I thought it was. The most normal looking of the of the exaggerated looks.
Yeah, it's just, you know, the points in the paint stat. Well, the whole thing's painted now.
Well, so I was going to say, yeah, points in paint, 100%.
All of them are in the paint. We were talking a lot this week about Domas, and Domas had, you know, another triple-double against the Pelicans, but a lot of people, Jer, have been calling Kyle and I and texting us and on the chat asking us about, why doesn't Domas play the four? Why do you think Domas, what we've been saying, or what I've been saying is, well, he would really struggle defensively if he had to guard other fours. But what can you tell us about Domas? Should he be playing more four? Why doesn't he play the four? Did he play four in Indiana? Where is all that?
Well, he did play a lot of four in Indiana, and for those of you ever watched, yeah, he can guard fours. Actually, it's, you know, you see him now, he's probably the best center in the league at switching out on wings. The absolute best, much better than Embiid or Jokic, that's for sure, or Davis for that matter.
Yeah.
Because he actually gets out and covers them. And so he does better there than he does stopping people at the rim. But to your question, the reason he doesn't play more four is, I think, a simple one. Who plays five? You know, I mean, who plays five? I mean,
Trey Lyles, JaVale McGee.
Yeah, you can trot somebody out there, mm-hmm. but does that make you better? And I would say that's probably what why, in effect, Coach Brown doesn't do it. He doesn't think it's their best team. Mm-hmm. It's probably more easier to play Trey Lyles at four and keep Domas where he is than mm-hmm. the reverse.
Yeah. What kind of player could play five a lot? Not names necessarily, but just a skill set that would complement Domas if he's playing four.
Well, I think actually I think Turner does to some degree at Indiana.
Uh-huh. Sure.
Like I said earlier, I thought they misplaced him a little bit. Is that Turner is pretty effective on the perimeter offensively, and he's not near that good a passer, whereas Domas is much better as the hub of an offense. Reverse him, reverse him offensively and defensively.
Mm-hmm. I've always felt that Domas is a very willing defender, but not a very good defender. I saw a graphic on Twitter yesterday that showed that he travels during a game. He actually covers more ground just in defending than just about any other center in the league when it comes, as you say, getting out on wing players. How good is he defensively, or how challenged is he defensively?
Well, I think he's as a center that can switch out on players and pick up guards or wings, he's probably the best in the league.
Wow.
I would say almost easily that I've seen. Now, having to guard centers in the low post or guys going to the rim, I'd say he's well below average.
Just because of size and
size and length. Size and length. And then the third thing on that is the Kings can't afford to have him in foul trouble.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they just can't. So there's that. But, it's a conundrum, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, I don't think I've given him enough credit defensively for defending as well as he has. When we come back here on Sactown Sports, Jerry's going to break down the rest of the West, where the Kings fit into that picture. 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. Got comments, questions for the great Jerry Reynolds here. It's a Drive, guys, on Sactown Sports. Ho, 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 that holiday time of year upon us here. Jerry Reynolds is with us here. Drive, guys. Mrs. Reynolds, or you, Mr. Reynolds, you have the holiday decorations up yet?
Mrs. Reynolds does.
Yeah, does she?
Yeah. Oh, she got out there day before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Yeah, she, tries to embarrass the neighbors. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean.
Put some pressure on him, yeah.
Yeah, because Skip, my neighbor, Skip Lee, who actually is he's a fine artist, but anyway, we have a trophy, but you don't want the trophy because it goes to the loser. And if you get your holiday lights up first, the other guy gets the trophy. And I was in Japan and came back, and he's got his lights up, so I had it last year. I guess I'm hanging on to that sucker.
Yeah, it looks like it, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's... No, I Mrs. Reynolds. She's taking full charge of that.
Uh-huh.
And
and
she said, "What would happen, if I couldn't do it?" And I said, "We'd have no Christmas lights."
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. On the chat here, the YouTube chat, Sack Chat, as I think Ellen Stiles calls it, people raving about Tyrese Haliburton having a big game here in this first game of the. In-season tournament semifinals. How in the world did Tyrese Haliburton last as long as he did in that draft?
That was amazing, yeah. 12th pick in the draft, and probably with that particular draft, I mean.
Right. You look at some of the guys, bless them all, but you look at some of the guys that were taken.
Yeah.
Killian Hayes?
Yeah, I mean, fifth pick, I think he was.
Uh-huh.
He's, barely an NBA player, you'd mm-hmm. say. And, Hallie, I mean, there's no doubt he's an elite player. You look at the top guards in the league and whether, with Fox and Shea Gilgeous, the young ones, I mean, Luka Doncic.
Uh-huh.
I mean, Haliburton belongs in that category. I mean, there's six or eight young guards that are, you can make the case for any of them being the very best.
Yeah, yeah. Patrick Williams, I think, was in that draft. And again, bless all these guys, but how did Haliburton fall to the Kings? How, Jerry, to your eye, has he actually gotten better since he was here?
Well, he obviously was always an outstanding three-point shooter, but he's really developed that mid-range game, especially the floater. He didn't have that at all when he came, and it was basically just kind of a spot-up shooter. And, of course, teams could take that away from him. They knew he couldn't really do a mm-hmm. lot going to the basket. And then I've noticed the last last year in particular, yeah, that three-point shot is to speed it up. He's bringing it higher. You know, he used to bring it from almost his hip up, now starts shoulder high. And so it also is harder to defend, you know, because the defender's getting up on him makes it easier for him to beat him off the dribble as well.
That's the only thing I can think of as far as why teams passed on him, because, you know, he was a good defender, size, unselfish player. The jump shot was, he was an accurate shooter. It was a little funky looking. So, I mean, I'm guessing a lot of teams looked at that shot and said, that's not going to translate to the NBA.
Yeah, you know, that's what happens. And you can never be for sure. You know, I mean, it's like a lot of so many great players, you know, Klay Thompson 11th or, I mean,
right.
Now you understand that maybe a little more with the foreign.
Kings could have taken him, you know, Jared, and they decided not to.
You know, yes, I am aware of that. And, you know, we really helped the Warriors as much as we could at that time. You know, but I mean, it's, I always say that, as you pointed out off the air, you know, the foreign players, it's easier to see how you overlook them. Mm-hmm. You know, the Dedekumpo at 16 or whatever he was. Clearly, he should have been number one.
Yeah. Although Jeff was on him, right?
Yeah, he that was a guy he really thought, you know, like, mm-hmm. and he'd be first say. I'd never anticipate him becoming one of the three or four best in the world.
Yeah.
But then, of course, the classic of all time is Jokic.
I mean, oh, yes.
41st pick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's almost like Purdy being the seventh
it
round.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But then, I mean, the league, I always say in football, they draft worse than the NBA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's so many guys they're picking,
But I mean, the quarterback, but the quarterback spot, I mean, the one most important position, the one they're supposed to know the best, I mean, it's like people talk about Purdy, Mr. Irrelevant. Well, Montana was a third-round pick.
Yeah, I think if I ran an NFL team, I would say, I don't care who it is, we're not drafting any quarterbacks until the third round, because there's too many guys, too many teams, they put all their eggs in this basket and you end up with a Trubisky or somebody.
Yeah.
It's like, because you get that mindset, we need a quarterback, we need a quarterback, we need a franchise guy. Who's out there? Who's the best quarterback right now? This guy. Well, he's no good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've seen that, you know, whether it's the Jamarcus Russell
over.
Jameis Winston or Ryan Leaf. I mean, high
Marcus
picks.
Mariota. Just, yeah, sure.
Yeah. I mean, and then, you know, then you got the Joe Montana's third round and Brett Favre second round. Of course, Brady's sixth round.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Brock Purdy's seventh round. But then all-time greats. Johnny Unitas wasn't even drafted.
Right.
Wasn't even drafted.
Yeah, and even your guy Mahomes, the 49ers, said,
yeah,
we don't need to take
him
because we're gonna get Kirk Cousins.
Yeah. That worked out. But I mean, so you just – it's – crapshoot. I always say is, you know, what you don't know, you can't know sometimes. What kind of leader they're going to be, how hard are they going to work? Do they want to get better? Do they have the unusual competitive spirit type thing?
Yeah, and we all talk about it, but you've done it, right? I mean, you've been there. You've had to make these decisions. Where do you think the Kings are with Davion Mitchell? Where were they? Were they wrong about him? Was he just a better fit for the previous regime? Do you think he can still be a good player here or somewhere?
I think he can be a good player. I'm not sure he fits here as well, you know. And, I mean, I don't think that's unusual. I always just kind of use him, just seeing him play the first couple of years. He really does remind me so much of Kyle Lowry. I remember Kyle when he was drafted by Memphis and they decided he couldn't fit there very well after 1 year, and then he went to Houston. And they decided after a couple of years he wasn't quite ready. And so after his third team, then he became a real star. And, I mean, Bobby Jackson's another example of a small guard who needs to be in the right fit. And and so I think with Davion, you know, hard worker, I think he can find a niche. And probably it's not here.
Kings maybe – is the pace Mike Brown wants him to play maybe just not the best fit for him?
I think so. You know, I just look back on his college days, you know, when he was kind of the best player on the NCAA champion.
Yeah.
But they were a half-court team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they ran a half-court offense. They ran half-court defense. And, I mean, they played you 5-on-5, and he was terrific in that sense. So, I mean, not that you could play that way in the NBA, but I would say probably he would be better in a, you know, Miami Heat kind of game. Some of the teams that really play a little more half-court situations and a little more play calls, things of that nature.
I thought that if he improved his shooting this year, that he was going to play a lot of minutes. And we know he worked on it. He worked diligently on it. And he's had a few good games, and you can see, when you see him shoot, you can see it some he's worked on, and the stroke is there. It's just not there often enough yet.
No, it really isn't. And I've always said I think he's like a lot of players, really. He has a tough time being good in 5 minutes here and 4 minutes there. And
yeah.
Most players do. I mean, in other words, I think you're, again, using Bobby Jackson or Kyle Lowry, a lot of the small guys, give a guy like that 30 minutes, 30 straight
this
games.
This is when you're playing. This is when you're going to the game.
Yeah, you're going to play a lot. And I mean, the reason I would say that with him is he plays so hard. He's a competitor. He's really going to be involved. But, offense is a small part of his game. And so the more he plays, he'll get some points.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he'll find a way to be productive, I guess. And like I say, he's not a Malik Monk who can create – situations automatically. And of course, that's another example. Malik, high draft pick for Charlotte, who didn't work there.
2 years, right?
Yeah, 3 years there and didn't work. And then, of course, the Lakers, I mean, that year with the Lakers, you could see that he was ready to be a player.
And you talked about when you pick somebody, you don't know what's inside. Malik is a classic example of one of those guys. If you ask him, hey, how are you doing this? And he said, he will tell you, I could always do it. Mm-hmm. I was always there. Here they give me a chance to show, but I always had it in me. So you need
a guy like
that.
Yeah, there's a lot. You look at Kings of the, I mean, Kevin Martin, for instance, he didn't really play at all for a few years. And I mean, it's for good reason, there's so many good players. But and he probably started doubting he could play.
Mm-hmm.
But once he got the chance, the minutes were there, the opportunity he found a way to be a really top player.
We'll look at the West as promised when we come back. Also, winning the in-season tournament, is that banner worthy? Why NBA players are debating that? When we come back, we'll debate it as well here. It's a Drive Guys with Jerry Reynolds in today, Sacktown Sports.